Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in the field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. We are a discussion on any and all things ERP and organizational change. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success.
In this episode, we will discuss effective organizational change with Dr. Eric A. Canny. Dr. Canny is a faculty member at the University of Southern California, Rossier School of Education. He is an educator, entrepreneur, faculty member, producer, and researcher. Dr. Canny is also the founding director and chief innovation officer for a Global Risk Mitigation Foundation, a multidisciplinary business risk consultancy providing independent and objective risk assessment, compliance services, and cutting-edge risk management information. He is also the founder and producer of Genesis Films, a documentary film company focused on showcasing wicked problems around the world and solutions to them. The Genesis Media Foundation leverages media to enact change in education, human rights, immigration, environmental and food sustainability, as well as medical needs and medical rights. Dr. Canny has authored articles on various international education issues, including a chapter in the NAFSA's Guide to Education Abroad. He recently published a chapter on the Study Abroad Retention and Student Success in Critical Assessment and Strategies for Increased Student Retention in IGI Global. He presents globally on topics relating to international education and diversity, higher education trends and recommended practices, cultural transmission, risk assessment, and mitigation, holistic and large-scale program development and implementation, gap analysis, and the deployment of technologies in the global operation of higher ed institutions, with a particular focus on the specific needs of global processes while integrating with other systems. Dr. Canny has been an invited delegate to the World Innovation Summit for Educators, where he has presented multiple times. Jack, I'm so excited for this conversation with Dr. Canny.
Yeah, same here, Jonathan. This is going to be a fun conversation. Well, thanks, Jonathan. So in this episode, we will explore effective organizational change. Along with any ERP and organizational change effort comes inherent risk. So risk may be at the onset of a project or evolve over time during ERP organizational change lifecycle. However, as we will discuss today with Dr. Canny, he states, nevertheless, there are means to minimize such risk, whether pre-existing, potential, or unforeseen, end quote. These risks are countered in part through principle-based organizational change, advocating for appropriate organizational culture, effective change leadership, organizational learning, trust, and evidence-based inquiry. We will discuss these organizational change-based ideas and more. Dr. Canny is a friend, colleague, and absolutely extraordinary educator. Dr. Canny has a passion for a subject matter, but I think an even greater passion to teach, serve, and share. Dr. Canny, thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Jack. It's great to be here with you and Jonathan. Really looking forward to this conversation.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Canny.
So I'm excited to share your experience and insight, Dr. Canny, with our listeners. So let's dive in. So I'd like to start off by sharing a quote that I read in an article titled Understanding and Facilitating Organizational Change in the 21st Century. It's a recent research and conceptualizations by Adriana Kazar. So I want to share because although this paper was focused on higher education, I feel that it summarizes well my view on the ERP organizational change field. So the paper states, quote, a critical synthesis of research literature on the process of organizational change at the institutional level is needed because higher education is being asked to be responsive to an ever-changing environment. This work focuses on providing the reader several key insights into the change process by one, presenting a common language for organizational change, two, describing the multidisciplinary research based on change, three, highlighting the distinct characteristics of higher education institutions and how this might influence the change process, four, reviewing models, concepts, and organizational change derived within higher education, comparing and contrasting different approaches, and lastly, number five, providing principles for change based on a synthesis of the research within higher education, end quote. So Dr. Canny, in different practices and fields in general, we tend to see many different approaches and methodologies, especially in, for example, organizational change, organizational development, personal development, and education in general. And my professional opinion is that within ERP organizational change field, we don't apply some great insight that sound objective research provides. And we know it to be true that some approaches work better than others and some don't work as well. What do you think it is about practice that works versus practice that doesn't work?
And I'm thrilled that you use Dr. Kazar. She's a brilliant individual and researcher. And that quote, I think, just really synthesizes, you could, in my mind, you could actually pull out the word higher education and put in organization,
sure.
Right? And so I think what she really speaks to is that we do have a body of research and we do have a body of practice. And as you said, we know it can work, and I want to reinforce the can. There's still ideas that you should move through. Like as she says, you know, that sense-making, that moment when you actually have to have a common language in the organization for the change, that why. And so I think what she's just saying is that, and I would agree, that we have to really look across the different organizational landscapes. There's no one model for organizational change. There's a lot of common themes in them, but that any organizational change has to be looked at with a model in context with the organization. And why is it even changing? Right? I mean, for me, that's a core question. Like, yeah. You shouldn't be changing for change's sake. And so it's, I think part of why I love teaching is that there's a lot of research-based principles. And if we bring in the things like adaptability, self-discovery, you know, these new, the conceptual mental models, those are all tools that we can help to create a little, I call it controlled chaos, right? Because change is going to be a disorderly, it's going to be a disorderly process, right?
Right.
And it's sort of the fail fast, fail often. But back to the quote that Jack said, you can predict some of that failure. And so, you know, at the core, we're talking about human beings and organizations comprised of them. And when you're asking human beings to change their belief systems or how they work, what they value even sometimes, that's hard. And so I think what Dr. Kazar is just saying is there's no one way to do it. But we can use the successes and the failures and learn from them.
Yeah, great point. And for our listeners, by the way, it is a great article, and I'll be sure to include that in our episode notes. But thanks, Dr. Ganey. Yeah.
Yes, and Dr. Kazar is actually doing more work as well. And so she's a great resource for your listeners because she's always doing research and events in the field.
Dr. Ganey, I mean, fantastic answer. And when I think back on my experience in organizational change, one area that many practitioners talk about is the systems. And if they're lucky, they start to talk about behaviors. But I know one of the ideas and focuses for Jack and Nestle and Associates, and one I agree with, is that when we start planning for significant organizational change, what I would describe as transformational change, we need to include organizational culture into that. And as you are aware, there are many observable and there are many intangible manifestations of organizational culture. Can you talk a little bit about organizational culture and its effects, both positive and negative, on organizational change?
The last part is a massive, massive question. Well, but I think it's interesting. You had Dr. Clark on another podcast, and there's a quote of his that I use when I teach, and I'm going to misquote, so I'll paraphrase. But organizational culture is similar to a fog within the organization. And why I like that is because I think that we often think about organizational culture when we toss this word around, and that makes it become more like this fog. But going back to the research-based practices, we know that we can break the fog down. And I love the fog, and with Dr. Clark using it, because it's hard to see at first. And then if you start applying models to think about organizational culture in different ways, you can start pulling that fog apart. But that I also love it because that fog just permeates everything. And so I think it's a quote I think I use in almost every class with org change, because we often hear organizational culture is bad. But then, okay, attach something to that. Why? And so when we teach organizational culture and breaking it down, you mentioned settings. And so I think one of the things that the very first thing we do is look at the work of Shine and others, in that there are models, sort of the values that we have, and then they're the settings. And it's by breaking those two apart that you can start seeing where you have alignment or you don't. Back to the loaded question of what's working or what isn't. But that's where you actually get to the gap analysis. And so models are, when we teach it, it's very much around, I often say a model is what does an organization value, right? We value transparency. We value accountability. We're a learning organization, the broad statements. But then you go, okay, so let's step back, and then what settings, and we use the word settings as opposed to resources, to what are the settings in the organization that support that model? Because if those settings aren't there, does that model truly exist? It's sort of, talking the walk, right? And it helps us to break down and say, okay, so if it's unobservable that the organization is transparent, but we can then attach observable things like trainings, release of the financials, the strategic plan, how open is the HR process, stakeholder meetings, right? And so that's why it's really important to define organizational culture, I think, before you even start saying it's bad. that's my two cents.
I just want to see if I can capture this for our listeners, because there's so much value in what you just said. right? The first thing, if I'm distilling it down, is we need to be aware of organizational culture on any transformation and recognize that it may be observable and it may not be. And we have to define it before we start to observe it. And then beautifully, you asked, well, are we really in alignment with our organizational culture for what we're trying to do? And how would we know? I mean, what an incredible series of questions to ask on most change projects.
And I would also say asking that question before you start the change project. Back to, you know, what is our organization now? Are we living our values? Do we have the resources? You know, if we want to change, Lewin, you know, freeze, unfreeze, refreeze. Well, what I really love is Samsung. Samsung just released a refrigerator that's making circular ice cubes. It's very much like with Lewin. So a lot of the visuals with Lewin is freeze. You see, we've got a square ice cube, unfreeze. But what if we actually bring the new Samsung idea and we want to go from a square to a circle, right? And so it's looking at what's causing the square, what defines the square, then planning unfreeze, and we'll actually refreeze in a circle. And when you refreeze, you've got to reconceptualize and plan before you go in. And that includes an analysis of where you are. And again, if you take the time, then you can actually say, this is where we want to get and how we're going to get there, step by step. That's important to do before you unfreeze.
Great illustration. So, Dr. Caney, with that in mind, what would you say is the organizational leaders or the executive team's primary role in advocating for successful change? Does research tell us anything about that?
Yes. So research, and it's interesting because this is one thing where if you look across the different models that are out there, and I'm not advocating one model over the other, you need the why. Why are we changing? And for me, this is very much similar to like when you're teaching innovation or entrepreneurship. What's the value proposition, right? I've got to create value proposition for my team and my organization to buy in. What are their pain points? What can I make go away? And maybe they don't see the pain points, right? Like their job's great, but the company's not doing financially well. And so I have to translate that why and create a sense of urgency. And I would say that's what an entire leadership team needs to do across the organization.
Mm.
You know, and I think this is one of the things we see is it's not a leader, right? If you bring in someone to do organizational change, they need the leadership and support of everybody, whether that's in the C-suite or the managers. Because the next step to be successful is you actually have to build a coalition that supports the change. And I think, again, that goes across because not everyone's going to want it. Back to, you know, the predictable, unpredictable. One thing we know, not everyone's going to want your change and there's going to be resistance. And so it's building that sort of the coalition and being clear you're in this for the long haul. And the other thing I would say leadership has to do, acknowledge the small wins, right? And small wins can be linked in for me. One way I do it is I link them into the strategic planning process and even into like my team's goals, right? If we're in this change process that's going to last 3 years, they have to have some small wins, but those small wins build up. And so I think it's about good, clear communication, stepping up as a leader, walking the floor, and being united as a team.
Hmm.
And back to your point, research would tell us that, right? You need the urgency and it needs to be a team.
So Dr. Caney, just to follow up on that, I couldn't agree more, this idea of small wins and celebrating the small victories. And, you know, you go through some of these organizational change efforts that are 1 or 2 or 3 years, you know, at some point, it's not just waiting to get to the end of the tunnel. You got to celebrate the process. So do you have any tactical or practical points on ways to celebrate? I hope my question makes sense, but tactically, what you can do to celebrate the small things?
You know, so it... And they may sound really corny, but, you know, a lot of times my part of the organization, quote unquote, has been charged with leading the change effort. And so depending upon the culture, some things that we've done is, you know, individually sent out thank you notes, right? People have gone above and beyond. They've embraced a new process. They've done something around a new value. They've hit a new KPI. The other thing too, my teams have usually had something where they literally take a rock and they paint a U with like sparkles on it. And it sounds really crazy, but because a lot of times the change effort team, you know, or the leaders of it, at first everyone loves you, right? Yeah. You're going to make things better. You're going to do this.
Right.
And so one of the things that we've done too is we've used that rock as a moving small win across the organization. And so that is something that we, like, as a team, you know, you embraced a new process or you've collaborated across, and it could go to a team or a person. I think newsletters are a great way to do it, right? It really depends upon what an organization has. I've been in some organizations where Salesforce was used to track how many people were doing new behaviors and things like that. And so back to that communication from the prior question, what are you doing? How are you communicating? And then leveraging it within the culture. And I think it's really important to call it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super important. And Dr. Canny, before we move to the next question, I want to just take a moment to highlight something you said at the beginning of this last answer. And you said it really quickly, but it's, in my experience, it's one of the most common things that change leaders do not do. They easily address the what's in it for me at most levels, right? So at an executive level, at an organizational level, and whatever model you're using, ADKAR or otherwise, at an individual level. But what you asked us to do here is to create a shared context of those what's in it for me, so that each level can see what's in it for me, for my organization, for the marketplace, for our customer, for our overall environment. That's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, because this is where is org change top down, bottom up. It doesn't have to be either way. It's really important that you have people, maybe the C-suite or marketers, that are scanning they're scanning your environment, right? And maybe that triggers the change. Or that coupled with your internal processes in IT, they need to change. And so I think it's really important that you do everything you can to get as many people on board, because once you start, I call them pulling levers, right? So we're going to change this system, we're going to change that. It's
sure.
going to ripple through.
Yeah.
And there's no way that it's not going to ripple through. So stop pretending that it's siloed and do everything you can to get as many people on board as fast as possible and see why it matters to them.
And this is perfect, because one area that often isn't discussed, or in Jack and my discussion, certainly not discussed enough in practice and certainly not formally, is change and individual and organizational motivation, and how that sort of meaning and relevance sits with individuals and teams. And how does that impact the actual organizational change effort? Do you have any comments on this?
There's a lot. And I think this is where there's actually a lot of research that I wish were looked at more publicly or commonly. Mm. It tends to get buried in social systems theory or in the psychology of individuals. Multiple sources have said this, but 70% fail, right? And a lot of that failure is actually has been found to be attributed to motivation. And I want to make a clear distinction here. It's not that motivation is more important necessarily than other aspects of organizational change, but we forget to look at it. If we don't look at it, then we're in trouble. There's a couple of other things. Motivation is both intrinsic or extrinsic. And a lot of businesses still may have the extrinsic. And I get it. Like, you're operating on bonuses, sales teams, right? Those have been around a long time, and they work. But what we've also learned from research is that they don't work for everybody, and they're not as powerful as the intrinsic motivators. Mm-hmm. And so if we go into those intrinsic motivators, and there's about 12 to 14 different types of them, that's back to that why, right? I want to master this. I believe I can do this. If I do this, I will make someone's life better. And those are more long-lasting. And that's where I think this actually gets complicated, because you're looking at taking individual motivators for people and trying to bucket them the best you can. But, you know, we see a lot of people really, for example, self-efficacy is really common. I want to be able to make this change, right, in this moment, or I want to master the new process. And so that, getting into that level of thinking on the individual is central to organizational change. And I think, I think we do it all the time when we're working with our team, right? We know how people are motivated, right? This one's driven by this and this one's driven by that. And you leverage the team. But when you're doing org change, you've got to take it up to the entire organization.
Yeah.
And really realize that, you know, the CEO could be, or the CFO could be driven by numbers, but if you're an education organization, a lot of your people, they're driven by the student outcomes. And so how do you reconcile the two and create a mission or vision that speaks to everybody within that organization? Mm-hmm. Motivation is totally central.
Well said, Dr. Caney, on a point that not only is critical, but I feel, at least in our trade, sometimes often undervalued and underemphasized. So well said. Thank you very much. So Dr. Caney, can you speak to the value of organizational learning during an organizational change endeavor? I guess my question is two-part. Isn't organizational learning a primary lever for successful organizational change? And why is that? And how does learning influence organizational performance?
Sure. So I would break it apart. Let's start with organizational change, and then we could go into organizational performance.
Sure.
And the reason for that is similar to org change or organizational culture. What is a learning organization? A lot of organizations say they are one, and I say, let's strip it down and find out if you really are. And so at the core, when we're looking at a lot of organizational change and why do we have to do organizational change, a lot of it manifests in behaviors. You know, people aren't doing something, we're not hitting the KPIs, whatever it may be. And back to that org culture, they're observable, right? We can actually see we're not hitting something. Organizational learning, it comes in, I would say, with the knowledge, the training to improve that org, right? And to move that change forward. So we need to change processes. We need to, whatever it may be, we have to remember to train the individuals to do that. And so that requires a lot of resources, right? Because we know from training that it's not a one-time thing. And so I think looking at, back to that planning process, looking at what does the organization know now? What do I have to teach them? What resources have to be in place? And then how do I push that forward as similar to the motivation, right? Bloom's taxonomy, right? We know that people learn in different ways. And so I use Craftwell, right? So if we go back to the organizational change, if people don't even know the fact of why the organization's going to change, then to try to get them to be self-reflective on how they feel about the change or to conceptualize the change, not going to work. And so you need to scaffold that learning up individually and put an accountability structure behind it to make sure that that learning sticks. And that's where I think it comes back into how can it influence organizational performance is anything from the concrete, right, improved processes, customer service, the training that the people go through. But I think for me, this is also when a true learning organization is one that is generating knowledge, embraces that knowledge, and then pushes that knowledge forward in its own. That's when we have a learning organization.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's for me, it's, I often say, is this a data-driven organization or a learning organization?
Dr. Caney, right there, there's something I want to dive in a little deeper with our listeners. And we're going to put the article link in the show notes here, Harvard Business Review on, is yours a learning organization? But we're at this point in the conversation. Can you describe some resources needed to advocate for and actually build a learning organization? What does this look like?
It's a lot of resources. And I actually think that that's why, you know, teaching for years, when we ask students to actually break it down, a lot of times it's very, I would say the majority of our students say they have a learning organization, but then when we really break it down, they don't. And so, I mean, I think at a really high level is that going back to one of the settings is that you have to actually embrace learning. And one of the things that we do, we sort of forget when we leave school, is we want students to learn from failure, right?
Yep.
That's actually how they learn. But when we move into organizations outside of, you know, K-12 or whatever it is, we stop rewarding failure. And we see this in a lot of other business literature, you know, fail fast, fail often, but truly embracing it as opposed to saying you are. I mean, celebrating that someone failed, right?
Yeah,
that's
right.
The kind of, you need that behavior. Let's say someone failed in a beta launch. Well, that could have saved your entire company, right? Because you learned something from that. But I think the other thing then to drive down to your question is to really look at what data do people have, right? Internally and externally. And I use data broadly, from trends to customer service to whatever it may be. Is that data easily accessible, right? That's huge, because if people can't access the data, then how can you be a learning organization?
Right.
And then I think that goes back into the training of, does everyone have to be a data matter expert? No. But does everyone have to at least understand what it is that they're looking at? Yes. And so I think it's creating that, just like we would in a classroom. Like, do you have access to the materials? Do you have a good teacher, right? And then what do you do with that to push forward? For me, that's what a learning organization is. Did I answer your question?
Fantastic answer.
Yeah. So Dr. Caney, as you know, we recently had Dr. Clark on the show, and he mentioned how critical it is to identify and verify the root issues that may be prohibiting organizational performance. So prohibitors of accomplishing that mission of improving organizational learning and performance. So there are influences that are sometimes more invisible, they're harder to measure, and therefore hard to address. And Dr. Clark mentioned that sometimes you can assume too much in terms of what you think the root issues are inhibiting organizational performance. What might you say about that?
I completely agree. And, you know, I'm not encouraging that everyone go get a dissertation, let me be clear. But I think that back to research and what, when someone does a dissertation or does that level of research, we check for bias. We check for opinions, right? And we're always pushing people to truly look at the why. I mean, there's the other common business of the five whys, right? Peeling back those layers. And so I think if you go back to employees, let's make it real concrete and say, we aren't making progress. Talk to your employees. Maybe it's that your training program is awful, right? I hate to say it, but, right? You know, if your training program isn't good, don't make the assumption that it's the employee's fault. One of the things that I often say is the organization itself should actually take the responsibility for the majority of what's going on, not the employee. And that sounds odd, but the organization's responsible for the culture. The organization's responsible for the resources and settings that we put in. And so it's that self-reflecting on what are we doing as an org, and it may not be where we think it is. Right.
Sure. I mean, right.
And so, you know, for me, it's back to slow down before you make the org change and make sure that you've really figured out what's going on before you try to do anything.
You know, one of the things I often find in organizational transformation is by its very nature, you're dealing with multiple stakeholder groups across silos, across countries, sometimes across different organizations. And this is a bit of a general question here, but sometimes I find leaders and members of an organization unable to grasp the diversity of views going on in the organization. And that could be, you know, viewing stakeholders as opponents, sometimes stakeholder input as just buy-in to get my decision done. And sometimes it's stakeholders' views to create a better decision. How do you see and have that discussion in organizations about stakeholder groups and the way we as leaders in organizational change engage with those stakeholder groups? Dr. Caney?
I mean, it's interesting because I would also say it's the stakeholder groups internally, but also the stakeholder groups externally. And so at the core of this, what I would say is you're thinking about diversity, right? And diversity could be measured in who's our demographic, but it's also back to the diversity of thought, right? And so for me, it's central, right? There's and we have there's book diversity bonuses out there, but what it actually ends up doing, I think, and back to both the change process and then hopefully a static process, is it starts creating healthy conflict, right? I think back to you used the example of make this change because I want it. Well, let's get some divergent thoughts about that, right? Is that actually what your employees want, right? Will it support them? And I think part of this too is hard that is that diversity takes work, right? It takes what is healthy conflict. Some organizations, don't like conflict. Others, it can go into toxic. But I also think that it's really important to be very clear with what's happened in the United States over the past year. It's become more clear to organizations, but this was always here in terms of it's an external factor that we should be holding accountable to, right? Who are we selling to, right? How are we treating our employees? Are we operating by ethical standards and morals, right? And I put morals in there. Ethics and morals are different, but that goes even back to that motivation, right? If you act ethically and morally, that actually may motivate your employees.
Yeah.
If they feel that their voice is heard and that you're taking that time, diversity is hard. But I would also say when we teach, we look at diversity. Diversity at a certain point is easy to measure. It's numbers. But when we get to equity and inclusion in an organization, that's where you have to really make an effort, right? Just to say that our numbers are demographically, we mirror the United States population. That's the great first step. Now, are those people at the table? Are those people leading the dance, right? And that's harder to measure, but you can do it. And I think that that's when you start moving into actually having a bonus from diversity. And back to innovation, divergent viewpoints.
There's so much there, Dr. Canny. And one thing I want to just focus on a little more for our listeners within this whole context is, what about creative conflict? You brought it up, and I think for a lot of our listeners, that might be a strange idea. Can you talk a little more about this?
Sure. We call it healthy conflict. And for example, you asked how small wins. So some of the teams that I've been on, I've purposefully created teams with divergent viewpoints, right? And that could be diversity broadly. One rule that I had in a team for years was you could only talk if you were holding the squishy ball, right? And because the healthy conflict is also active listening to the other person. So holding your tongue, right? We often jump to that defensiveness, listen to what they have, and then respond. And there are other tools that we have that we often think of these things as polar opposites, but there actually is research in the theory of polarity management. How can we actually balance this conflict and get the best potentially of both ends? Conflict in organizations can become an either or and, right? My way, your way. And if you actually go through and do team building and training, you can have healthy conflict. If you don't have healthy conflict, there's a great book called Abilene. And Abilene is something I think most people will say that their organization has gone there, which is there's this great, what appears a great idea or someone's motivation to go forward. And there's all of these reasons not to do it. Not on our strategic plan. It's big money, but it's not really what we do. And no one raises their voice. And that's what we call a trip to Abilene. And they happen all the time.
Yeah.
And they can be really small. I mean, it's sort of like, it's happening, like there's a train wreck going on, and should I say something? Yes. That's the healthy conflict. Because if not, then you waste all of these organizational time, and you could end up being off mission. And so I think, I don't know that I'm giving you concrete ways to do it, but there's a lot of research out there on healthy conflict if your listeners want it.
Yeah, very valuable idea. And I can put some of that, I think some of the research and articles in that regards in our episode notes as well. But yeah, great feedback, Dr. Canny. Thank you. Just a slight change in topic. There's a great quote, short and sweet. It's called "Great Managers Hold Up the Mirror." And I think I first noted that it was in First Break All the Rules, What the World's Greatest Managers Do Differently by Buckingham and Kaufman. So I guess a challenge question, Dr. Canny. I think that is well established in research that leadership obviously plays a critical role in organizational change success. If you had to distill your experience, your work, your research into a couple of sentences for our listeners or for organizational leaders, what advice would you give them?
I would actually go back to something I said earlier, which is about holding that mirror up. This is your responsibility. And the first breakout, there's a great 12-question quiz in that book. I think it's 12. And psychologists have looked at these answers. And minus one of the questions, all of the responsibility for, you know, do I have friends at work? Do I like work? Does my manager give me good feedback? All of those are ultimately the responsibility of the organization. And so I think it's about holding that mirror up and really looking at what are we as a leadership team doing to build trust, to advocate for diversity, to make sure that we have that buy-in from those, you know, say thank you a lot of times. The things we've really been talking about, to do that first. And I think that goes back to, you know, the question about Dr. Clark in terms of don't assume that it's other people. Let's also look at ourselves and what we as leaders and our teams are doing, and then move forward with that as leaders in an organization before we start any type of change.
Good advice. Very nice.
So, Dr. Canny, change has both a human component, and of course there's data involved. You know, how do you talk to your students and organizations about the relationship between supporting change with data and evidence-based inquiry and taking into account the human side?
We have qualitative research and we have quantitative research. And I think I am an advocate of using both. And I'm an advocate of using both in pretty much any situation because numbers can only tell me so much, right? They're ways in which we can make sense of the data, right? And so I think, you know, if you have a 1 to 5 rate our customer service, that kind of thing. And we deploy that in an organization. But I think the important thing back to bringing in qualitative research, I mean, and good qualitative research, and looking at how do you ask questions? How do you avoid that bias, right? Probably a leader or someone in HR shouldn't be the person asking the questions because you may not get a truthful answer because your team is or your employees are scared to give it to you. And what that does is that actually gives voice to the data, right?
Yeah.
It puts that data in, it brings it to life, right? This was another consultant who, they did a morale survey. Morale was really low in the organization. And they went out and they said, why? And one of the top things was one person controlled the radio station that they all listened to every single day. And that sounds really stupid, right? But, I mean, imagine having to listen to music you don't get to pick all day. And so they talk about a small and quick win, changed it, and every day someone else, a different person, got to pick the radio station. Morale went up, right? And wow. And I love it as one of those examples of if you just look at the data, you may not necessarily know what's truly going on, right?
Yeah.
And it can be these really small fixes or wins. The other thing too, and another great tool to do this is putting out the pulse surveys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Checking in and then back to how do you scaffold your data. I love data. Sorry, I could be here another hour talking about data. but I think how do you extract that voice? And that's sometimes more important than the number. The number tells me what. The number doesn't always tell me why. And that why is what you need to get to.
That's powerful. That's a powerful insight. Dr. Canny, great conversation. Thank you so much.
Sure.
So I would like to conclude our time together today with one more question, if I may. So in our conversation and throughout our conversation today, we've discussed a lot about research-based recommendations, right? Mm-hmm. And as you know, I'm big into, you know, applying sound proven research to practice. I think there's a huge right. place for that, especially in my field and in many others. But what would you say are some of the most common traps or errors in terms of research-based recommendations that prevent organizational change?
Sure. I mean, and I'll use some from Cotter, and I'm gonna pull some others in as well.
Sure.
But I think there's not establishing back to that sense of urgency. And, you know, that's why I've started talking about it as value proposition, because I think a lot more organizations can understand value proposition. They're doing it all the time with their products.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the exact same thing with why you're going to change, why you're changing your product, which is your organization.
Mm-hmm.
You need that coalition, right? And one of the things, too, it's not just the senior leadership. This has to permeate every level of the organization. And so you need a powerful coalition that's diverse across the silos. And to say it's just the C-suite or, you know, whatever director, no. Push it down into anyone who has a leadership role. They need to be a part of that coalition. I think it's having a vision of where you're going to go, right, and communicating that and understanding that there's a fine line between under-communicating and over-communicating. And this is where I think, too, how does an organization communicate? Is it a multinational, right? Is it a small family business? How you're going to do that, there's no one way, right? But it's being aware of that. There's also something that we talk about when we teach is also realizing that there's potentially grieving in the organization. And we bring in stages of grief and Kubler-Ross.
Mm-hmm.
And they sound really odd. And let me be 100% clear. This is not research-based. Okay, Kubler-Ross is. The bringing
yeah.
it in this perspective is not. But I think it's important to think about that a new leader comes in, or we take away things, or we change the vision, and it's no longer what I thought I signed up for, that people could be grieving. And I think sometimes it's important that we get so focused on, well, I changed this process, and I do that, and I do that. Back to, we've talked so much about how much this is about the employees or the team. Where is your team? And maybe if you're the new leader, they need to grieve. And so it's allowing that grieving, because if you don't, it could very well come back as resistance. The other two things I would say, well, three. One would be, we talked about this, the short wins, building them in, celebrating them across the silos, realizing you're in this for the long haul. And, you know, this is one of the things people say, you know, I want to change. Will you come and change an organization and do it in a year? I'm like, no, right? It may back to that, getting all that data, that could take 6 months if you're going to get
yeah.
good data. And so it's that sort of that declaring victory too soon. Like, no, honor the small wins, honor the medium ones, and then realizing that you can't declare victory until this actually sticks. And so back to, you know, Lewin and Freeze, is it truly permeating everything? That's when you've actually been successful. And so those are sort of what I would look for if I were in an organization leading change.
Wow. Great advice. I love it. That's great. That point on allowing to grieve, what a fascinating idea. Yeah.
Well, and I would say, I absolutely encourage people to think about it. And I want to be clear, because, you know, someone who's an academic, it is not grounded in research, right? I want to be 100% clear. And it's been controversial, but I do think it's important to have in mind.
Yeah.
Right? That we know that grieving is part of the human process, and different people will be at different stages. And so I think because sometimes we become the cheerleaders. Well, if that other person doesn't want cheerleading right now, they may need a shoulder to cry on. And to remember that, because we're so excited about the change, to bring the other people along, you have to sometimes go where they are.
Dr. Canny, it may not be, as you said, it's not research-based, but one of the things you do with this lens is you really create a human experience in the organization, and it's such a counterintuitive idea. Thank you for sharing it. Really insightful from my view.
Sure. Good. Yeah.
Dr. Canny, Yeah, thank you so much for your time today, man. It was a very fun conversation. Your insight and expertise is greatly appreciated. What a fun conversation.
This has been great for me. It's a lot of fun. I'm grinning, so it's I love talking about that.
I agree with you, though. Man, I could just sit and have that coffee, and we could pick your brain for 3 hours. So we appreciate your time today and some of your insight and expertise. I can't wait to share this in different forms, for sure. I know for sure our listeners will find this this episode very interesting. So thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please join us in our next episode as we discuss digital transformation, leadership and tools with Mr. Jeffrey Kahn. Mr. Kahn is a speaker, trainer, best-selling author, and expert in digital transition. Mr. Kahn has a well-respected podcast, Digital Oil and Gas. He is also author of Bits, Bytes, and Barrels, The Digital Transformation of Oil and Gas. Mr. Kahn helps create demand for digital innovation, teaching digital awareness to oil and gas companies. He reveals the way to be more capable of adopting digital innovations. Jeffrey enhances the supply of innovation by helping digital innovations better fit the needs of the industry. Please join us again next week.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to, and we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.